Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Sunday evening for March 28th, 2021. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks with you to walk you through a WrestleMania preview here tonight. I'll be off next week. The PWT Talks NXT gang will be with you for that one, and they'll be previewing the NXT TakeOver Tonight extravaganza. So you'll want to make sure you tune in for that one. And it's going to be a good one. And then, of course, in 2 weeks, night one of WrestleMania on Saturday night, night two on Sunday night, I'll be taking your phone calls and emails here on Wrestling Night in America after WrestleMania goes off the air on Sunday. So lots to get to tonight, lots to get to in 2 weeks' time. For WrestleMania as well. Really excited about fans being back in the stands and this event, which we'll preview again here tonight. I'll have Kelly Wells joining me in a moment. You might recognize him from NXT, from the PWT Talks NXT group, and he'll be along with Tom Staupe and Nate Lindberg next week to preview NXT TakeOver. I had just gotten a text from my girlfriend moments before we went on the air, and she is right now at the county fair with her son, and this is a fairgrounds that we can see from our house. We can see the Ferris wheel. That's how close we are. It's big enough that we can see, and I'm not a fair person in terms of going to fairs. I like to think I'm a fair person, but not a county fair person. So I resisted. Tonight's the last night for it, and I've resisted going. And she finally said, you know, she's going to take her son tonight. And I said, well, that's an easy out for me because I've got the podcast, so I can't go tonight. And she just texted me that I'm missing live pro wrestling. And I was shocked. I didn't know there was any pro wrestling around here. And then she sent me a picture. So I'm trying to get her to give me all the details she can find out from this event because it's news to me having pro wrestling in this area. I'm hoping, you know, if there's major updates that maybe I'll share them with you as we go on here tonight. But really interesting. That's what's going on. And unfortunately, I'm missing out on it. So, oh well, hopefully I'll get some details on it and she'll share it with me. So, again, 515-605-9345 is the number to call here tonight if you want to get on the phones and talk anything about our preview of WrestleMania, your thoughts on WrestleMania Night 1, Night 2. WNIALivecast@gmail.com is also where you can go. I'll be monitoring the emails. We've got a few in the hopper that we'll get to tonight about WrestleMania and about other things. So, because there's a lot going on in the world of professional wrestling. So with that in mind, I welcome aboard Kelly Wells, PWTorch.com contributor and one of the voices of PWT Talks NXT. I think this is Kelly that I put on the air. Kelly, welcome to the show tonight. Okay, maybe this isn't Kelly I'm putting on the air. Let me try again.
Ah, yes, there's that word, unmuted. That's nice. Okay.
Wonderful.
This is Kelly Wells.
There's two 111s showing up in my switchboard, so I wasn't sure which one it was.
Okay, yes. This is Kelly Wells. I do the NXT recaps for The Torch, and quite a few New Japan recaps as well. Did three of them for the recently completed New Japan Cup, and then I host PWT Talks NXT and the VIP podcast NXT 8 years back, which is fun stuff right now, going through some times that a lot of people know about, but don't know a lot about. We banked a bunch of episodes because we're about to, I mean, this Peacock changeover is brutal and people are losing their minds over it. And we're not going to be able to do some of these NXT 8 years back episodes right away. Just one of the many things wrong with that switch over to Peacock right now.
Yeah, it's causing a lot of consternation very early on for a lot of fans. So hoping this all gets worked out in favor of the or in benefit of the viewing audience, especially before WrestleMania gets off the ground in 2 weeks. So we'll have to see how that works. And Kelly, I want to thank you for joining me kind of last minute here to talk WrestleMania on this episode. I know you guys will be previewing NXT TakeOver next week. I appreciate you guys filling in for me next weekend. But since you guys are going to hit TakeOver, that's your specialty next weekend, I figured we'll talk WrestleMania. Basically, the card is set 2 weeks out. There may be room to add a match on night two. They may add some to the preview show or the kickoff show. But I think basically this card is set. And from a macro point of view, Kelly, when you look at the card, how strong of a card do you think this is?
I don't know if it's just that it's been so long since it's been a WrestleMania, but I'm actually kind of looking forward to it. I don't know why that is, and I don't, but all I know is that as I was preparing to be on this show, I was feeling a little bit of excitement for this WrestleMania, and some of me felt like I should be embarrassed for that, but maybe I'm not alone. there's a couple of very familiar matches here. Fiend and Orton, like, I'm not excited about that. Owens and Zayn, I am excited about that, but they have done that a lot. And then you've got your obligatory celebrity match, not always obligatory, but you know it's there, and your very obligatory Shane McMahon match if he's there. And I'm not excited about that either, but I understand they're going to do it, so might as well put him and Braun Strowman in one place. I think there's enough excitement on the top of both cards that there's a lot to be excited about here.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is I don't think it's a terribly weak card at all. And we'll get through, we'll go match by match here tonight about these each individual night. But I think there's something to get excited about, I think, unless you are, you know, a pessimist, I guess. You know, there's some things that I think could be really good. I'm looking forward to it. Obviously, you know, I think the big clincher for me is having fans back and just seeing what that's going to be like, seeing what the reactions are going to be. I'm really interested in seeing what that's going to be like. I think that's going to add something to the atmosphere as well that's been sorely missing for the last year. So let's start with WrestleMania Night 1, Kelly, and let's start with Cesaro versus Seth Rollins. This is a match, one of those matches that, you know, you can dislike the build, you can dislike the Rollins character, but it's going to be a good match. And so I'm looking forward to it from that point of view. The Rollins character, you know, he had taken some time off when Becky Lynch gave birth, and then he came back, and I feel like somehow he's more bland now than he was when he left. And that's very frustrating to me because I like Seth Rollins. I think he has potential to do great things. You know, I was on board when Monday Night Raw was being built around him as the top babyface star when Roman Reigns had gone away due to his leukemia. So to see him in the role he's in now, which is just with all this time off, they couldn't come back with something a little spicier. You know, I think that's the frustration for me. Again, match is going to be really good, but there really isn't a hook character-wise, I don't think, for this. So, I mean, what's your take on the Seth Rollins character, and do you agree or disagree about the blandness or how vanilla that character has become?
Oh, I absolutely agree. It's WWE has had a long history of accidentally turning upper mid-card acts into just another guy. By having them tread water for a long time. And they've done that with guys like Orton. They've done it with guys like Sheamus. And those guys are on slightly different levels from one another, but it's something that has happened a lot where you just can't believe how vanilla somebody becomes after periods of being really the hottest act in the company. I certainly don't think there's a lot going on with this card right now. This card feels very slapdash. A lot of it's going to be good, but you know, as I watched Raw this week, I watched the Hulu 2-hour version because I'm not a monster. And I turned that on, and it said the road to WrestleMania begins, and I'm like, begins? God, it's 3 weeks away. Like, what a weird. Like, I know some of it's already in place, but I just, that's not enough time to build the biggest show of the year. And some of it's that, like, they put themselves in a position to have to do that. I think it's iffy to even have one pay-per-view in between Rumble and WrestleMania, if WrestleMania is going to get the proper build, but two is just getting really greedy. But yes, all that said, this will be a banger. This could open the show, but they love tag matches opening the show too. So I wouldn't be surprised if New Day versus Styles and Omos gets the nod instead. It's a stupid build, and it's a silly. Like, the big question is, how many times can Cesaro swing Seth Rollins? I feel like they're already giving Cesaro an out to lose a match that could really elevate him by saying, oh, but he did swing him 42 times. So I don't know,
yeah.
But I'm very much looking forward to the match itself.
Well, the other deal with the swing, too, is it's a way to get the crowd into that match. And so when you've got the live crowd back, and you're maybe a little nervous about how they're going to react and what they're going to get into. I think it's going to be a great crowd just because they've been away for so long. They're just going to be excited about everything. I mean, that's kind of my impression of how it's going to be. But certainly on the swing, the fans are always into that move. So it's almost like WWE is kind of leading the fans to that and saying, you know, we're going to promise you a big swing. You better pop big for it. You better have a big reaction for it because we're talking a lot about it. So that's kind of my impression of the discussion of the swing. And also, I do think you're right about Fastlane. You know, first of all, I didn't think it was a very good show just as a show, which is a problem. But then, you know, when you look at how many of the builds have suffered because of the necessity of having to build around Fastlane before you get to WrestleMania. And I think it makes it even worse in hindsight. So I'm hoping that's dropped next year. I'm hoping it was just, you know, put into place to test out the kinks for Peacock before WrestleMania. I don't know, but hopefully it's something WWE avoids next year before WrestleMania. The next match we'll talk about, as you mentioned, is the Raw Tag Team titles, New Day versus AJ Styles and Omos. I think this could have been just a normal run-of-the-mill tag title match, AJ Styles and somebody versus New Day, but I think the intrigue of seeing Omos wrestle will help this match feel bigger than it otherwise would have. And so, you know, what do you think of AJ Styles? What do you think of that, first of all, that idea? And then what do you think of AJ Styles in his role on this show being in a tag team title match as opposed to, you know, something maybe bigger? I mean, he was in the big Boneyard match last year, which was one of the most pushed matches on the show and one of the most interesting. And here he is a year later in sort of a middle-of-the-road tag team title match. So, you know, is this a good spot for AJ? Should he be doing something bigger? And what do you think about the draw of seeing Omos wrestle?
It's not a disaster for AJ to be in this spot. And the match does have intrigue. They've got the one tag team that's a genuine draw in this match. And then you've got the draw of Omos, us not knowing what he's going to be like. It's going to be very interesting to see AJ in a position where he's the fall guy for his team. Like, he has to make the tag because he's getting beat up and not the one who's destroying the other guys. For that reason, I assume that the heels win this match. Certainly you could have almost lose and then chalk it up to inexperience, or if they want to do something like that. But you could also have AJ be the fall guy. New Day has done a lot of jobs on WrestleMania. I feel like they should have some wins, but this wouldn't be. But more to the point of AJ and this spot, there's only so many seats at the table at the very top, and I can't find fault with what they're doing with either championship. We'll have, I have a lot of thoughts on Reign's Edge, Brian, but I don't have any faults with what they're going with for these championship matches. So to put AJ in a spot like this, I think still gives him some shine and puts him in a match that people are looking for. So I don't think of this as even as a great, great admirer of AJ's in-ring work, I don't think of this as a terrible spot for him.
You know, I think my problem is mostly, you know, the feud, or not even a feud. I mean, it's not really even a feud. You know, the match started with AJ basically going up to New Day and saying, hey, I don't have anything to do for WrestleMania. Let's have a tag title match. So I know that every storyline and feud can't be a winner, but I would have liked to have seen, because, you know, New Day and Styles, and to a lesser extent almost, they deserve a little more than that going into WrestleMania. So that would be my only thing on that one. Braun Strowman versus Shane McMahon. We get to talk about this one now. This has been one of the strangest builds of any of the matches leading up to WrestleMania. The seeds were planted some time ago, so I thought that was good. It's been, you know, a seed planted for a while now, even though Shane McMahon's return sort of came out of the blue, and him bigfooting Adam Pearce was a little weird. This is built around the impression that Braun Strowman is stupid. Which, okay, he's a big sort of meathead character. He's known for tipping big things over. He's not known for his intellect. You know, he's not a vintner like Eric Rowan was, or, you know, playing chess like this tortured genius like Eric Rowan was on SmackDown at one point. So I can buy that someone would consider Braun Strowman stupid, and Braun Strowman would take offense to it. But the way it's been executed has been just bizarre, with Shane McMahon performances on Raw that either purposely or accidentally have just been unwatchable. And then there's really nothing beyond Shane calling Braun stupid over and over again. Like, I mean, I feel like there are creative ways you could, if you're a Shane McMahon character, expose Braun Strowman for being dumb instead of just going out there in the ring and calling him dumb. And so I think there was potential here with this story, but they've just completely gone a different direction with this.
In terms of yearly WrestleMania build sins, one of the most egregious year after year is Shane McMahon no-selling the fear of a match with a monster. It's so annoying to me that, like, yeah, he runs, but he just in a very cocky way talks down to Undertaker, to Braun. When he wrestled Undertaker, the announcers, it was so easy. All the announcers have to do is frame it as Shane only has to wrestle once every couple of years. And he knows his way around a ring, and he's a McMahon, so he'll do anything in the world to win. So don't overlook him, because he will do anything. He will take those risks, and he cheats. Yeah, like, that's all you got to do. But that's not the story they're willing to tell with the boss's son. They just say, like, with Undertaker, it was actually offensive that they're saying this is Undertaker's biggest WrestleMania challenge yet. And you have to laugh out loud that's the way they're promoting it, rather than what you really can do. I feel like Shane has value, but that's the value. So for him to do that to Strowman as well, it's not surprising. It's just tiresome. And I'm not some big Braun Strowman fan. Like, if he wasn't on WrestleMania, I wouldn't even notice. So if you're going to have him in a match, might as well have it with McMahon. I'm not looking forward to it, but if he destroys Shane, like, in a way that it's over for Shane, that would be pretty cool. It won't happen, but that would make it a WrestleMania moment.
And I think you hit on the main issue with Shane McMahon whenever he does come back, is there is a very wide chasm between how WWE portrays Shane McMahon in storyline as a wrestler, and then how fans view him. Because I think fans view him like you. Here's this guy who's not a trained wrestler, who's 50 years old, who I think I read in the Wrestling Observer, Dave Meltzer noted that Shane is as old as Gerald Briscoe was when he was one of the stooges for Vince McMahon back in the Attitude Era. So just to kind of give you perspective. And so he's not an athlete. I mean, anyone who's seen him in action knows that. I mean, he does athletic things, but I don't think he's really an athlete. So fans view him as this sort of, you know, this part-timer who comes in every once in a while. He's a McMahon, so you have to take him somewhat seriously. But when you compare him to a Braun Strowman, who is much bigger, who is much stronger, who is a trained wrestler, who wrestles year-round, fans don't understand WWE's billing of Shane as a big threat to Braun, whereas WWE sees Shane as this legacy star, this McMahon that we're supposed to hold up at a higher plane than we do, you know, some other full-time wrestler. So there's a very wide discrepancy between how fans see Shane and how WWE sees Shane, and I think it's getting worse as time goes on.
It is, and I think part of it getting worse is just the fact that he continues to look older, and there's nothing they can do about that. I mean, they can dye his hair, but we're in on that already, so it would be a Band-Aid on a corpse. Like, they can't keep trotting him out there and having us think that the yearly Shane McMahon match is a big deal anymore, like from the days when he wrestled X-Pac, and it was a fabulous overbooked mess that actually was worthy of WrestleMania.
Yeah, every year we're getting further and further away from those types of matches from Shane McMahon, and we're, you know, it's the stunt bump, and that's really what you're looking for. And I think it'll be the same way this year. Bad Bunny versus The Miz is our celebrity match of the WrestleMania season. Looked like for a while this was going to be Morrison and The Miz versus Bad Bunny and Damian Priest. Instead, they're going with a singles match. What do you think about that decision?
It's odd, because the best wrestlers in this are Priest and Morrison, but yeah. Miz is exceptional at his lane. Like that, I don't mean that as a slight to Miz. I just really like the work of Priest, and I think Morrison is just one of the really great guys of his generation, and perhaps by WWE fans a little underappreciated. But Miz is exceptional at knowing his lane, and I think this match, as is more of a draw than Miz and Morrison against Priest and Bunny, just because Bunny has to win this singles match, which seems more unlikely than Priest and Bad Bunny beating Miz and Morrison, which we, I think, know that they would. So I guess from an intrigue level, it's better, even though as a match, it won't be better. I don't know. It's they've gotten, I mean, they got a good match out of Snooki. Like, Snooki was pretty decent. Like, and that's not, maybe that should, I don't know if that should or shouldn't be a surprise, but in terms of getting somebody ready for one match at WrestleMania, they've got a pretty good track record. So I'm not worried about that. I also think Miz is exactly the guy you want in a wrestler versus celebrity match, because Miz, as a character who is a wannabe celebrity, of course he wants to take on celebrities. So I understand the decision, even though it will result in a lesser match. Obviously, they love Priest. Priest is on the poster. There's only like 10 guys on the poster, and Priest is one of them. So they love him. But and I think this spot can do as much for him as actually being in a match would. This is probably stupid, but I'm looking forward to this. I think that this will be fun. And I don't want one of these on every pay-per-view, but one on a two-night WrestleMania, yeah, that's fine. I'm into it.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. You know, I don't have any problem with Bad Bunny's involvement in WWE. I think they booked him pretty well. You know, the thing with me and not understanding why this isn't a tag match is Bad Bunny his purpose, in addition to, you know, garnering a certain demographic of audience to WWE shows who otherwise wouldn't watch, is to get Damian Priest over. And if Priest isn't in the match, you know, how do you get him over? You want those eyeballs to be watching Damian Priest do his thing and getting over as a wrestler. So I'm sure Damian Priest will be involved in some way if this doesn't turn into a tag match over the next 2 weeks. And we do need to qualify everything that we talk about here tonight with the fact that there's two episodes of Raw, two episodes of SmackDown still to go before the two-night WrestleMania. So things could change. This could eventually develop into a tag team match. But yeah, the curious thing for me is it's obvious Bad Bunny is being used to get Damian Priest over, yet you don't have Priest involved in the match, at least as of yet. So I think it will be entertaining. I think Miz is the right guy to go against here, and I think he is a good enough heel where if fans aren't sure how to feel about Bad Bunny, I think the Miz is a good enough heel to get people to turn on him and to favor Bad Bunny, especially the live crowd. You never know how a live crowd is going to react to a celebrity being involved in a match. And so I think the Miz is the right guy to turn that crowd and to not have a lot of people cheer him. The SmackDown Women's Championship is on the line in night one when Sasha Banks takes on Bianca Belair. And I thought when Bianca Belair won the Royal Rumble, and it seemed pretty obvious to me at that point that she was going to challenge Sasha Banks for a match at WrestleMania, that with the proper build, that match could have been a contender for a main event spot on one of these two nights. Now that we're a few months removed, 2 months removed from that, I think it's pretty safe to say that this is not a legitimate contender for a main event spot, that last match of the show. And that's really disappointing to me because the build has been, in my opinion, very bad. I think it's another one of those where Fastlane and having that show before WrestleMania hurt the build for this because you had to come up with some other things to throw in there to get you through Fastlane, to get you to WrestleMania, and we had the Reginald stuff, and we had the tag team stuff, which I could have just left out completely. But it appeared on Friday night on SmackDown that they may now be past all that stuff, and it looks like there's going to be three episodes of SmackDown now, last week's and the upcoming two, to get this back on the right track. Is it too late, do you think? You know, if you're someone who has not liked the build, is it too late for WWE to get you to come around on this, or do you think 3 weeks is enough time for this match to take its rightful place as a match that's built on two of the strongest personalities in the women's division, two of the, I don't want to say biggest egos, but you know, they think they're the best, and they want to prove it at WrestleMania against the other?
I'm not going to say it's too late because I've been convinced by go-home shows about how great something could be. But it's probably too late to make this a main event match, which it probably could have been. If I had seen these match rundowns 2-3 weeks ago, certainly before Fastlane at least, I would have said this match would main event, even though you could go with either of the top two. Part of it is the build for this. That's the problem. And part of it is just MVP being the MVP of this company and doing such a great job in promoting everything that his wrestlers aren't involved in. So that's part of it. But yeah, this is one that should be pretty straightforward. It probably doesn't help Bianca, the babyface here, that she's like all the things that make Sasha a bad guy. Bianca is kind of those things too. She's just nicer about it. These are both characters who are similar. And when they go heel or go face, they just kind of, they change the volume. That's really all it is. They don't change who they are really at all. They just change the amount of how much they are. And so Sasha is peak Sasha right now, and Bianca is Bianca on a diet, I guess. So I am a massive, massive Bianca fan. This is the match I'm most emotionally invested in, but I would love for the I would love for it really to be driven home with some strong build and some real dastardly stuff from Sasha and one great babyface promo by Bianca that just cuts through all the BS and sets up a clear mission. Cause this is so close. And both of them are capable of this. Sasha as a babyface doesn't work for me at all, but as a heel, I'll take her all day. And Bianca, I think, works on either side of the aisle, but I think we're only one promo away from this being right there.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you about Bayley, because much of 2020 was about Bayley and Sasha Banks doing their thing and doing it well. Bayley does not have a match on this show. And she's been downplayed a little bit on SmackDown, you know, doing the Ding Dong Hello segments and things of that nature. But first, I mean, you know, who do you like in this match, Banks or Belair? And then Bayley, does she play a part in this at all? You know, I don't know that the book is completely closed on her and Sasha Banks. Then you look at the potential of Bianca Belair winning this and Bayley maybe being the first challenger for Bianca Belair's title. So your thoughts on Bayley and where she stands right now come WrestleMania season with her partner of much of 2020, Sasha Banks, being in such a prominent position on the WrestleMania card?
I am still somewhat convinced in my own ridiculous mind that Bayley is going to beat up Michael Cole at WrestleMania. or there will be something with her and Michael Cole at WrestleMania. And I don't know. They don't like the intergender match. Even when they book one, they don't do any, they make no contact. We've seen that now. So it would be fun. Everybody wants to see Michael Cole get beat up. So that would might be fun. But Bayley's a heel, so how do you spin that? She's somebody who shouldn't be left off here. I don't know where you put her. Again, I don't have any issue with the two championship matches they have. I think they got four absolute top-flight talents. Rhea is, you know, there's still potentially work to be done, but she's somebody you got to go all the way with right away, I think. But we'll get to her. Bayley has certainly earned a spot. And with there being 11 matches and the only two women's matches being the championship matches, there's nothing even for the tag team yet. It is odd to see Bayley off of it, but I believe she'll have a presence. I don't think it's going to be in this match, although I wouldn't write out, I think the Raw after WrestleMania, she'll get involved with, I've got Bianca winning this. And I think that Bayley will get involved in with Bianca the night after. Hopefully that's not the, hopefully that's not just the consolation prize for Bayley, because Bayley should have a WrestleMania spot as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if WrestleMania is a culmination of the previous year, based on her work, you would think they would find a role for Bayley. And, you know, as much as WWE pushes the women's revolution and things like that, you don't have any women's matches besides the two title matches on the show. And you've got two nights. So I think that's going to frustrate a lot of people when they look at this card, especially somebody as talented as Bayley being left off of it. But, you know, we'll have to see. Hopefully, like you said, she does find her way on the card at some point. We've reached the bottom of the hour here on Wrestling Night in America. I'm Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, along with PWTorch.com contributor Kelly Wells, previewing WrestleMania. Yes, it's 2 weeks away, but next week will be our preview of the NXT TakeOver two-night event with the PWT Talks NXT crew, including Kelly Wells. He'll be back here next week with you guys. And then, of course, WrestleMania Sunday night. We'll be taking your phone calls and emails about that show after night two of WrestleMania goes off the air. But you can get on the phones tonight and talk to us, 515-605-9345. If you've got any comments about what we're talking about, you can also email us, wnialivecast@gmail.com. We've only got two people on hold, so you won't be on hold for long if you want to call in, although we're going to get to calls after we finish WrestleMania night one. And we got one more match to talk about, Kelly, and it's the presumptive main event of Bobby Lashley defending the championship against Drew McIntyre. You know, there was some speculation about who would go into this show as champion. Would it be Drew McIntyre? Would it be, you know, if it was going to be Bobby Lashley challenging it, would it be Bobby Lashley challenging? Was it the right move to have Drew lose and then go into WrestleMania as the challenger, or would you have preferred to see his title reign continue into WrestleMania and have Lashley as the challenger?
I don't mind this. I hate that WrestleMania season can be so predictable and so clinical, and you find a way to get the babyface on the chasing side of things. I think that part of it is unfortunate, but because of MVP doing such awesome work, Lashley on the mic, he's just not all that on the mic, but he does what little is asked of him. Okay. And in the ring, he's found a way to make his impact stuff work for him. I never would have thought that I'd be a Lashley backer, because he was always just kind of a forgettable extra piece to me. Just the monster that I paid perfunctory attention to, like Braun Strowman. But Lashley has risen so far above that. And that's him, and that's MVP as well. So, yeah, I can't take any... My only issue with this is that Lashley has earned a longer championship reign, but it seems like Drew, but Drew is like the guy that they kind of have to go with if they think that he's the baby face that can carry everything through WrestleMania season. I think that's a great problem to have, that you have two guys who should both be the champion. Like, that's a wonderful problem to have. And I'm very, very excited to see this. Both guys really, really know how to wrestle a stronger style as big men. And both guys who didn't 10 years ago. So I'm psyched about this. I could live with this or the women as the main event, but I think you're right. I think that this is the main event right now, and it's hard to spin any other match on top. So not even sure what else to say about it, except a round of applause for both guys for how far they've come and the fact that they're going to be main eventing WrestleMania, probably.
I don't think there's a wrong answer here in terms of who you go with, who WWE goes with as the winner. It felt like the switch was made so that Drew McIntyre could win the title, to have his crowning moment that he missed out on last year with no fans, to have it in front of fans. And that's really what it felt like when he initially lost the championship. But given the work that Bobby Lashley has done as a character with MVP, with the Hurt Business, as an in-ring performer, you do, you mentioned this, Kelly, you do kind of get that feeling of, oh, maybe you should hold it for a while, you know? And I don't know that I expected to feel that way, as much as I've enjoyed the work Lashley has been doing over the last year or so, as much as he's been protected in terms of his win-loss record. You know, there's no wrong answer here. So I'm excited to see this match. I think it'll be a really good match, as you mentioned as well. So that is night one of WrestleMania. We'll hit night two in just a moment. But first, let's go to the phones for our first call of the evening. It is the 814 area code. It is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, welcome to Wrestling Night in America. What's your first of your three-pack of questions for us tonight?
Yeah, first question's on something AEW's been doing with independent shows. Britt Baker and Worley showed up at IWC. And I guess they chose one wrestler, Andrew Palace, to appear on one of the YouTube shows. So is this something that's been happening a lot on the independent shows, or is this just a pretty rare occurrence of that happening?
I think it's been pretty rare, if only because there hasn't been a lot of indie shows operating in the last year. But I could see it as something that happens more frequently going forward. Tony Khan has made no bones about the idea that he's willing to work with other organizations, and that doesn't have to be just major organizations like Impact or New Japan. It can be some of these smaller independent companies. And AEW has tons of opportunity for these indie wrestlers. They've got AEW Dark. They've got AEW Dark Elevation. They're going to have another show coming up at some point in the future. So as deep as their roster is, you do need some guys to fill out those shows and some women to fill out those shows. So, you know, if you can partner with an indie show and lift that indie show up by having some of its talent on AEW and also, you know, getting a look at some of this talent. How are they backstage? How are they in the ring in the bright lights? Something that they may not have on those indie shows. That's advantageous to AEW when trying to look for future stars. So I think it's a win for AEW to use its clout and use some of its talent to go on these indie shows and really gift an opportunity to some of these indie wrestlers who might not otherwise have it. Kelly, what do you think about this potential AEW Indies partnership in which some of these indie wrestlers are used on some of these secondary shows for AEW on YouTube and the like?
I think this is a great deal for AEW. I think this makes perfect sense for them, and it's a total you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours situation. I think we'll see more of this. I think WWE, if Vince wasn't such a dinosaur of the business, I think you'd see more of that here. And we even do see a little of that with Evolve. But I think that this can only help. This is the kind of thing that didn't happen in the 90s, certainly the early 90s. And part of that is bullheadedness, but part of it is also the fact that in those days, you couldn't just bring in an indie talent and have anybody know who that was. It like in the pre-internet or early internet era, if you brought in somebody from an indie, then unless your entire fan base was reading Pro Wrestling Illustrated and knew that Eric Embry was important, then the name didn't mean anything to anybody. But now that these names have value, of course you partner with them. Of course you give them a few minutes in the ring and see what they can do, have them mingle with your talent, see what the talent thinks of them. I think that this is, and also Tony Khan, of course, has the benefit of being stupendously, idiotically rich. So that's part of that. I think that this is a partnership that will benefit them. And I think that for some of AEW's failings, maybe their greatest success is learning what they can get from using all the channels available to them.
Ryan, back to you for your second question tonight.
Yeah. Second question is on Roddy Piper being edited off WrestleMania 6. Has the African-American community been more upset that bad news Brown got deleted, since very few African-Americans were on that show, or were they happy that the Piper got deleted?
The last thing I'm going to do is speak for the African-American community. So I don't know what their attitude is, but, you know, it's something that – and that's been a big conversation on Twitter and on social media over the last week or so, is Peacock heavily editing sometimes WWE's previous shows that – you know, WWE before, when it was just on the network, would put up a disclaimer or maybe nothing at all. Peacock is a part of NBC Universal, which is a much bigger organization than WWE. And, you know, they have a lot more concerns, I think, than WWE does about WWE's past period, I guess. I'll just say that, WWE's past. And so, you know, there's reports out there that Peacock has people going through WWE 17,000 hours of footage that had been on the WWE network that will supposedly eventually be uploaded onto Peacock, editing off some of the major stuff. So, you know, I don't know, Kelly, I know we can only speak for ourselves about this, but what's your take on Peacock editing sometimes heavily a lot of the stuff that was on the WWE network? I know there are people who say, you know, you're telling an incomplete picture. You know, there may be now a secondary market for some of those shows if they were on DVD or whatever the case may be, released there, where that might be the only place going forward that they might be able to find those master copies that are not edited. So what are your thoughts on Peacock and the editing?
I hope at Peacock they are more interested in listening than they are in optics, because the decision to get rid of that match from WrestleMania 6 could easily be both. It could easily be both. It could be that a bunch of white men in suits made this decision to get rid of this because they're pretty sure that that's what they should do. But it could be that they actually talk to the African-American community, and that's where it landed. I have some guesses based on folks that I talked to about wrestling, but I'm not going to present those just because I'll say this. I think that a lot of people would be more upset that Bad News Brown was being removed from WrestleMania 6, but I certainly don't think you would have a 100% split either way. And I don't know all of the things that go into the decisions they're making, but I also will say I knew this was going to come up today, so I thought long and hard about it. I also will say that wrestling has such an ugly and sordid past that once you start removing stuff, I feel like it's going to be hard to know where to stop. Racism is a good place to start, but I wonder how much, like if you watch an old show, my brother and I watch old shows from the 80s and 90s all the time. We'll finish a pay-per-view live and then we'll say, let's watch some dopey era wrestling challenge. And you'll cringe at least a couple times a show. That's why I find Peacock's decision to absorb all this content so fascinating. I wonder if they know what they're getting into. Like you, Greg, I don't want to speak for a community to which I don't belong, but I will be very fascinated to hear those takes.
Yeah, absolutely. Ryan, your third and final question for us tonight.
Yeah, final question's on County Fair Wrestling, since you mentioned it up. Do you have any urban legends from County Fair Wrestling? Like, I know the one there at County Fair is that supposedly a woman broke her neck doing, like, mud wrestling, and also Harvey Whippleman once got, I don't know if you'd say kidnapped, but he went with wrestlers and sort of ran away from home at the age of 13 to become a professional wrestler. The two from my area that I've heard about.
No, I mean, the county fair that I grew up going to in New York when I lived there never had wrestling. Had Demolition Derby, which, by the way, I'm a huge fan of. Unfortunately, our county fair down here in Florida doesn't have it, but I had no idea they had wrestling. So I would – if I'd known that, I probably – I don't think today was the only day that they had it. I think they had it – this fair runs for about 2 weeks. So I should have gone to another one of those shows, but I just didn't look that closely because I really didn't have any interest in going. So I've learned my lesson. Next year around this time, I will pay closer attention to the county fair schedule and see if there's wrestling on that show. I do have an update. My girlfriend said, I asked her what organization was putting it on, and she said PPW with a question mark, like she wasn't sure. And there does appear to be a pro wrestling – you type in PPW into Google, and there's about 500 PPW wrestling organizations out there. But this one appears to be Platinum Pro Wrestling, which is a Florida-based organization. They haven't updated their Twitter in some time. They haven't updated their Facebook in some time, although they do have a couple videos on their Facebook page from what looks like a county fair. I'm not sure if it's this one or not, because I'm not going to watch the video in the middle of me doing the show. I'll do that off air afterward. But I was surprised when I heard her say that. So hoping to be able to go at some point in the future. And I just think, you know, it's almost, Kelly, it's almost weird to say, what, live wrestling almost in my backyard? We're so used to not being able to go to those things anymore that even just, you know, this sort of wrestling is something that I want to go to. But I don't know if you've been to any county fairs in your area, Kelly, or whether or not they've had wrestling or anything like that.
No county fairs. There was independent show, just a one-off that happened in my hometown. I grew up in a town, a very small town, 4,000 people or a little under, in southern Minnesota. And the only show that I know of that ever was there, and I can't believe there was even one, was a show that happened inside. We have one bar and grill in my hometown called Double Play, which makes surprisingly good pizza for a place that doesn't have any competition. And there was, they put a ring in there. I was sadly unable to go to this because of something that was going on, a very serious family thing that was happening elsewhere in another state, actually. And there was this, as far as I know, this is the only wrestling show, pro wrestling show that's happened in Blue Earth, Minnesota. And so they brought the ring into, it must have been a pain because there's just tiny doors in this place, brought the ring in, and they had this. And this was some years ago, which you'll know because the star of this show was Buck Zumhoff. Buck Zumhoff. I know. That's where I'm going with this story. So Buck Zumhoff, for those who don't know, is serving a lengthy prison sentence for transgressions against his own daughter. And all I will say is that at the time, some people I know, some people I go way back with and trust, were at the show, and they talked about Buck being extremely unprofessional before and after the show. Perhaps working with, I'll just say it's interesting to note when he was, who am I protecting? He was drinking before the match. And like, who am I? Like, this is one of the worst people in wrestling. So who am I protecting? And like half-assing this about. So it's, I can't say for sure that I know that this stuff is true, but I have no reason to doubt the guys that were there. And so Buck Zumhoff turning out to be, I mean, certainly you don't guess that someone's going to be garbage on the level that he turned out to be, but I wasn't surprised to see that he was not one of wrestling's good guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Not the name you want to put on the poster for sure. For any kind of wrestling. And, you know, maybe that's why it was a one-off. Who knows? Ryan, thank you for the call. Look forward to hearing from you again soon.
Okay. Thanks for taking the call.
And we'll go to our email question before we start previewing night two. And this email question is from Eli. He says, hello, Greg. Hope all is well. I have a few questions regarding AEW and WWE. Firstly, with WrestleMania coming up and having the biggest crowd for a wrestling show so far, what are some of the reactions you're expecting? And what are some different or surprise reactions, maybe booing Drew and cheering Lashley? And for fun, what's one wild card reaction you'd like to see? Mine is Titus O'Neil being cheered while Hogan talks. This may be giving them too much credit, but do you think part of the reason WWE pushes the brand so much instead of the wrestler and doesn't push their out-of-company appearances as much is because they're afraid they'll then lose them to the Rock, John Cena, etc.? Lastly, a fun question. Stadium Stampede, Mimosa Mayhem, Arcade Anarchy. AEW has had a few of these alliterated gimmick matches. They seem to love them. From the outside, it's a bit silly, but so far they've been okay. Can you think of any fun alliterations for wrestling matches? Thank you in advance. Well, let's start off with the first question. Any kind of, you know, I've heard the speculation that Drew could be booed. I just don't see that happening. I think for the most part, fans will just be so happy to be in attendance that they'll basically go along for the ride. So, you know, Bad Bunny versus The Miz is one we sort of talked about. You don't know how live fans are going to react to a celebrity appearance. I think Bad Bunny has done a nice job so far and has been very respectful, it seems like, of the wrestling industry, which is what a lot of fans look for. So I don't know that he'll get booed at all. You know, I don't think there's really a risk of Shane McMahon getting cheered over Braun Strowman unless it's just like, you know, he's the first major star that's on the show. Maybe that's the case. Banks and Belair, you know, there's a possibility that fans could cheer Sasha Banks, maybe boo Bianca Belair, but I don't really see that. I just don't, you know, The Fiend Orton, I don't know what kind of match that's going to be. I don't see a lot of opportunity there on the card where something's just going to be a reaction that you just don't see coming.
Yeah, I Sasha and Bianca is one that stood out to me where Sasha's going to have her fans regardless. I don't know that Bianca will be booed, but Sasha's got her fans regardless. I'm not worried too much about Drew either, because Drew has a genuine coolness about him that's hard to fake. With Cena, I know a lot of people found the act to be phony, and that was part of it. And with Roman, a lot of people just thought it was too much too soon, and they continued to hold that against him because it was easier or whatever. I don't think this show also isn't in the Northeast where you expect some of that from fans. So that
may not be as big of a travel a show where fans are traveling from other countries or other states, where you see a lot of that. You know, we see that on the Raw after WrestleMania, where fans sort of take over that show. If this is more of a local crowd because of concerns about travel, then you really wouldn't see that kind of reaction either.
Yeah, I think the biggest risks here are Braun versus Shane and Fiend versus Orton. People just crap on the match. Maybe they do that. But again, anybody here hasn't been to a show in so long. I feel like it's too much effort to crap on a match when you're only going to be there for a handful of them and you haven't been to a live show who knows how long.
The second question that Eli asks is about WWE pushing the brand over the wrestler so they don't become The Rock and John Cena and leave for bigger things. I think that's exactly why they do it. I don't think that's even speculation at this point. WWE may not admit it, but I think that's kind of the general consensus from fans watching from afar. And then the alliteration part, Kelly. We've seen a lot of AEW alliteration with their match types. I don't know what would, you know, the Elimination Chamber, perhaps WWE missed out on the opportunity. I don't know if there's a synonym for chamber that starts with an E, but they could have named the Elimination Chamber that. I don't know. I getting put on the spot with things like this is very tough for me to come up with. So any other fun alliterations for wrestling matches that that we're missing or that you can think of that would sound cool?
Oh, boy. I used to run a wrestling federation entirely of my own design with dice. And, like, I drew all the wrestlers and everything when I was, like, 12 to however long I did it. And I made a lot of match types that were of my own design, some of which I've seen since. And one of the ones I've seen since was, I don't know if people remember the championship scramble where, you could tag in and out or whatever, and then you could be the interim champion. But I had a very similar match type to that called the roundabout relay. And on very, very short notice, all I can give you is that I had a match called the roundabout relay. Otherwise, I'm sure that I could, go over a lot of these with a fine tooth comb. I'm sure we could find something for Elimination Chamber. And, maybe while you talk about something else, I'll surreptitiously find something there.
Maybe. I mean, the Royal Rumble is the greatest, perhaps, of all time in terms of alliterative match types. But as far as creating your own, I'm not a really creative guy. So I'll leave that to you or to perhaps, anyone who wants to tweet me any of their ideas at Greg M. Parks on Twitter. If you have any ideas or can think of any others that we missed, I'll be happy to hear it. Night two of WrestleMania, before we go back to the phones, I want to go through this here. And we start with Kevin Owens versus Sami Zayn. This is a match that's come together recently, Sami Zayn. I say it's come together recently, but realistically, this is a match that's been in the making for years. You know, you see the meme on Twitter sometimes being destined to fight forever, and that is Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. Former best friends, now bitter enemies. So, you know, Sami Zayn with his documentary crew, Kevin Owens doing his sort of thing. Yeah, it's a good opportunity to get two guys on the show who probably deserve to be on the show, all things considered. You know, there's not a lot to it. Basic undercard match. did this deserve more, do you think? Or is it, you know, for an undercard match, they still have 2 weeks to kind of play on the history that these two have together. Do you think they're going to delve into that at all, or is it just kind of surface tension of what they've been doing the last few weeks?
I feel like with so little time, they're just hoping that we already know the history between these two, and we are adding some of the sizzle to this match in our own mind, which I think is okay if you're going to put yourself in the position to only give yourself 3 weeks to build a WrestleMania. We know the match will be good. These guys have had a lot of matches against each other back to the days of Kevin Steen versus El Generico. We know this will be good in the ring. But yes, I think that they haven't given us much here, but they're hoping we'll fill in the blanks, and they'll probably have both guys talk a little bit more about the feud here in the next couple of weeks.
Next up, we have Big E versus Apollo Crews for the Intercontinental Championship. Apollo Crews, finding his Nigerian roots, has completely changed that character. He's now heeled Big E out on his own as a babyface. When Big E broke away from the New Day, is this kind of where you expected him to be at this point? Or is he higher or lower on the totem pole in WWE than maybe you thought he was when they initially broke up this team?
I think this is where I thought he'd land, even though I think there was a wide range of ways for Big E to land. I think that he could have been a main eventer by now, and I think that he could have been dead in the water because they didn't know what to do with him outside of this, because he was floundering before the New Day came together, even though he's got so much natural charisma, more than most guys on the roster. So I think that I probably would have hedged my bets and would have said, if he splits, I think he'll be at the Intercontinental United States Championship. He'll be a challenger for those championships. So he might even be ahead of where I thought he'd be, because he is holding one of those championships. But I did consider him a little bit as somebody as an outside shot to win the Royal Rumble. A lot of people talked about that. I don't know what the fear is. I think it's more just the fact that it's a very stacked table. It's hard to eat. So mm-hmm. I think that he's where I imagine he's happy with his spot, even though a lot of us know he's capable of a little more. And if it's not at this WrestleMania season, that's fine. If he doesn't get that at any WrestleMania season, that's fine. But I would love to see him at least have a cup of coffee in the main event scene and see what happens.
What do you think of the new Apollo Crews character? Thumbs up, thumbs down?
I think thumbs up. I mean, he had nowhere to go but up. So there was so little for him. He was just a guy who smiled and lost. So how could it be any worse? I've seen some of it. I watched some of the main roster, but I've been watching again in WrestleMania season. So I think I've seen most of this turn. I like that they are finally getting something out of this guy who they signed for a reason, and they didn't cut him during all the many times where they made some cuts for a reason. So if this is getting him to a higher level, that's great. It'll be very, very interesting to see if fans take him seriously, because other than this tag match that just happened and he got the pin on Big E to kind of set that up in this, I think it was a six man, he's mostly lost at every juncture of this as well. So mm-hmm. I think it'll be interesting to see if the fans find him believable or if there's still work to do.
Then we have The Fiend and Bray Wyatt. This is a contender for a potential cinematic match on the night. I don't know how that's going to go over in front of a live crowd. It would be the first that we've seen. But Is there any – I even hate to ask if there's any salvaging this, because there's just not. There's not. I mean, once you've gone this far down this road, you can't go back with this character. But they've also done so much. Like, how does this end? That's kind of my question is, you know, you've already had the Fiend come back from being burned alive. So if Randy Orton just pins him 1-2-3, what does that mean? Like, what of the Fiend then? I mean, does he just go on to the next feud? Is he just like another wrestler at that point? But, you know, you'd almost expect the Fiend, if he wins, the destruction of Randy Orton to be on par with what Orton did to the Fiend. So Orton is not this supernatural character that the Fiend is. So you can only go so far with Randy Orton. You can't burn him alive and he comes back, you know, later burnt to a crisp like the Fiend did, because he's not supernatural like the Fiend is. So the Fiend pinning Randy Orton would almost seem anticlimactic. So I'm curious as to how they get out of this.
Yeah, it's – sorry, I paused because I don't know what the hell to say about this. Yeah, these guys have tangled a lot, and what I've actually legitimately been thinking is that on the weekend where Kane goes into the Hall of Fame, they are in a similar position where they got a guy who's masked because he's burned alive, and eventually they're going to take him out from under that mask and be like, oh, it's Bray, his face is fine. And I already see when that's happening and all the retconning that has to be done with a character like this. The only thing that would shock me in this match is if it was a regular one-on-one match. I think you got to go cinematic with this, because otherwise I think they got a better chance of this being received well as a stupid cinematic match than they do a regular singles match. And I wouldn't be surprised if it was one of the ones that had no decisive finish. Like, you're just supposed to accept that it's over, even though nobody technically won. Like, it just ends with some big moment. It's the contender on this show to be the thing we talk about at the end of the year as being the worst thing of the year or the best surprise. I don't know how else this goes any other way. I have morbid curiosity here. I have car crash curiosity to see what they're going to do with this and how the Fiend, a guy who's been rebuilt 1,000 times, rebuilds from this.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It's going to be really fascinating to see what the finish is. And fascinating from, like you said, a car crash point of view. It's not something that I'm looking forward to necessarily, but it's going to be fascinating to see how far down this road WWE goes and how they get out of it with somebody like Randy Orton, who, you know, it's one thing, again, if you have two supernatural characters, this is Kane and Bray Wyatt, you know, go full steam ahead, go, you know, put the pedal to the metal, do as much crazy stuff as you can. But with Randy Orton, you almost have to keep it a little more grounded, as strange as that sounds, because you can't go that far with a character like Orton that you can with the Fiend. And maybe that's where the intrigue comes in for a lot of people, that push-pull effect. I don't know. The Fiend versus Randy Orton, night two. Asuka versus Rhea Ripley. Potential, you would imagine, for Charlotte Flair to get into this match to make it a triple threat. If she announced that she had COVID, so... if she is able to get back, you imagine that she would be in this match. But, you know, when you look at the roster of women on Raw, Kelly, it almost seemed inevitable that it would have to be, if not Charlotte, Rhea Ripley, who hadn't even debuted yet. But they're just – the Raw women's roster is so devoid of top contenders for someone the level of Asuka. Ripley is the only one that makes sense here, right? Am I missing someone? I mean, you could do a Jax or a Baszler if they weren't already engaged in tag team action. But beyond them, you know, Peyton Royce, they had an opportunity with her to turn her into something meaningful. They haven't done that since they broke up her and Billy Kay. And there's really no one else. I mean, Mandy Rose and Dana Brooke are still in a tag team. They're just – it's not really – there's not really an opportunity. You could bring Sonya Deville back. I mean, she's on SmackDown as Adam Pearce's right hand, but there's really not a story there for her to come in and take on Asuka right now. So it seems like it had to be Ripley.
Yeah, there was nobody else. It is. And if, honestly, just being honest, if this match that Asuka had with Peyton Royce was Peyton Royce's best effort against Asuka, then not choosing her was correct, because Peyton just kind of seemed like she was at half speed a lot. A lot of the moments seemed like Performance Center match stuff. I don't want to be mean, but it just was like, I could see pretty easily why they didn't go all the way with Peyton, even though there's some stuff to like about how she has progressed on the hype side of things, on the promo side of things. I thought that it would have to be Rhea. I just didn't know how they would make that storyline work. And they didn't. They just had Asuka beat Peyton. And Rhea comes out, and she makes a challenge, and Asuka says, "You're not ready for Asuka," and she accepts. That doesn't have to be a bad thing, but you know there would have been more here if they would have given themselves more time to do it. And there's still time for there to be more, but I don't know how you do this as anything but a respect story unless you have yet another person make a quick turn heel, and it wouldn't be Rhea. It would be Asuka, who is, you know, a tweener anyway, and have her turn. I think that this will be one of those matches that's very, very strong and very memorable, despite having really, really short-shrifted build. And I think that both of these talents deserve better. And Ripley doesn't just deserve better. She needs better, because right now she's still essentially in her infancy as far as the main roster is concerned. A lot of people have not seen her much on the main roster outside the Royal Rumble and a couple other appearances. But yes, indeed, going into the Royal Rumble, I told everybody who would listen that Bianca and Rhea would be the challengers this year. And here we are. But it'll be, yeah, Charlotte's the wild card.
Does Rhea Ripley need to win here? I know you talked about how she needs a good performance, but after last year with Charlotte and losing and kind of what that did to her momentum and this being her debut on the main roster, and Asuka, you know, Asuka's always a great champion, but, you know, there isn't a lot left for her to do as champion. Does this seem like a pretty solid lock that Ripley's going to win here?
Rhea 100% is winning this match. She needs to, and she's going to. Asuka is whatever mystique that she had from the undefeated streak. It's too bad it ended the way it did, but she's essentially Teflon. And we've seen that they'll move her back into that spot because they have so much trust in what she brings to the in-ring product. And I don't think it's a bad thing for her to be in a position to put Rhea over as she wins her first main roster championship. For me, this is the biggest lock on either night. And if Rhea loses twice, then you almost have to start telling the story of her not being able to win the big one. And that is a terrible story to have to tell for somebody who is booked as a monster. I do the media calls with Triple H for the Torch most of the time. And there was a question that he got, because once upon a time he said, Rhea lost that match at WrestleMania, but that's going somewhere. Trust. There's a big plan in place there. And you'll have to see that play out to see where that goes. And a number of months later, I think it was Jason Powell who asked, okay, so We waited for that and everything, and it just seems like nothing's come of it yet. Is that still in place? And Triple H, in a surprising moment of candor, because he keeps a lot of things, I'm not going to say kayfabe, but he chooses what he does and doesn't dole out. He said, no, plans got obliterated, and what we were working toward because of COVID, because of other things, didn't work anymore. We couldn't do what we wanted to do with the Rhea Ripley Charlotte story. And there's a lot of reasons for that. that have everything to do with the way of the world. So it was still valuable in that Rhea learned a lot, in that there's still something for Rhea to overcome, but everything we wanted to do, we weren't able to do. So for anyone who doubts why that match went the way it did, I guess that's the silver lining. And it was very interesting to, like, a version of Triple H who kind of, who's careful about the truth, who's very good about the spin, just said, no, we didn't get to do what we wanted to do.
Yeah. And then night two's main event, I think this is pretty solidly a main event of Roman Reigns versus Edge versus Daniel Bryan. You know, there was a lot of talk that Bryan could get involved, you know, even dating back as far as the Royal Rumble, even when Edge won it. But I think there's still some surprise that Edge turned heel like he did. Did you sense that Edge was lacking momentum as a babyface, and that's either why Daniel Bryan was involved or Edge turned heel or both? Or do you think they could have been successful with babyface Edge versus Roman Reigns one-on-one here?
I think they could have been fine then. I wasn't interested in it. I don't think that somebody of Edge's age should be a believable challenger for Roman Reigns. It's no slight to Edge. I loved Edge during his run, but that's not what I think should be a WrestleMania main event. That said, I thought that Edge's momentum as a babyface was fine. I was stunned that I wasn't surprised that Bryan got involved here, because it just seemed like, and they'll say it was planned, but I actually could kind of believe that here, because at many, he had his issues with Jay. He had stuff going on with Roman. It seems like this was maybe somewhere it was going to go the whole way. If it is, then why not just have Bryan win the Rumble, which is already a sin you've committed twice when he should have won it in the past, because that would be the most poetic. If he wins at the end of this, and I now think he will, because he's the only babyface at the end of a two-night WrestleMania in this match. If he's the one that wins, then the big question is, so why not just have him win the damn Royal Rumble? So I don't know if this was inaudible or not, if this was Edge, maybe them getting cold feet about saying maybe Edge is it at his age shouldn't be the babyface carrying the championship. Or what this is, we know that Edge is going to be gold as a heel. Like, there's no worry about that. Like, it was fun to see the return of rated R superstar, super weird, paranoid, cruel Edge. That was great. But I didn't see it coming, and I don't feel like it was motivated in a way that makes that part of it seem like it was anything but a late change to the game.
Yeah, Edge winning the Rumble when it could have easily been Daniel Bryan is the tell for me that adding Bryan was a last minute thing. You know, they could have decided, on a three-way and say, let's have Edge win the Rumble, let's have Bryan win the Chamber, and then, you know, you've got two guys who won very big matches against Roman Reigns. But Bryan certainly wasn't booked as someone who was going to be in a WrestleMania main event a couple months ago. You know, he's had his share of losses as well. And, you know, maybe that's what WWE sees in terms of getting Daniel Bryan over is, you know, he's more over when he loses, when he's the underdog. I don't know what the psychology is of that with WWE, but yeah, I don't know about Daniel Bryan winning. I think Roman Reigns could very easily win this. Daniel Bryan would be a nice positive send-off, and I think, you know, this was brought up a couple weeks ago, maybe even last week here on Wrestling Night in America, is how many matches are going to be, or maybe it was on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast when I did the flagship a couple weeks ago, how many baby faces are going to go over just because WWE is trying to give that feel-good moment with the fans being there. You know, how much is that going to factor into the match results? So that could be a reason to go with Daniel Bryan here. Roman Reigns obviously has a lot of momentum. You could see him continuing the championship through WrestleMania. I think I have a harder time seeing Edge come out as champion here than anyone else, because you imagine if Edge wins the championship, it's got to be, you know, you got to keep Roman Reigns in the main event scene, but how do you do heel Edge versus heel Roman? So that's a question you got to figure out too. I don't see Roman dropping down the cards that you do Bryan versus Edge in the main event or whoever Edge would face as champion. So, I think two out of the three are good bets for night two. It would surprise me if Edge won, however.
I'd be very surprised if Edge doesn't eat this pin because if Roman goes on to win, I think there's some money in him facing Bryan, and I'd be fine with that. And if Bryan wins, then of course you protect this version of Roman who is so, so valuable to the main event scene as a heel. I think Edge, who won the Rumble, is now only valuable in that he has to eat this pin in the main event of WrestleMania.
Interesting. Yeah, I think there's some validity there as well. DJ from Miami is on the phone. DJ, welcome to Wrestling Night in America. What's on your mind tonight?
Hey, guys. I got a couple little things. I don't know where you want to start. I guess we can start where you guys were just talking about. I feel like the same thing you guys feel. I feel like if they're going to do a three-way, I don't know why, because we all know that Roman's been doing this for, what, 3-4 good months now? I mean, he needs to stay strong. I feel like if they change hands, it's just going to ruin Roman. I feel like it should have just been him and Edge and not throw Daniel Bryan in. I feel like Daniel Bryan should have at least fought Edge before for the or something, or do it after. But I don't know. I just feel like it's rushed, and I just don't understand why they would do this when everybody knows going in there is going to be a good match with Edge and Roman by itself. I'm confused on this one. Why? Why would they just do that?
I think a lot of people think that Edge just was not as over, and it's hard to tell because, you know, there's no fans in attendance, so you're not getting that immediate feedback. Certainly SmackDown ratings were not through the roof with Edge returning, so he didn't bring that big star bump back to SmackDown. Even his first match back on SmackDown did not really put a dent into it. Maybe WWE saw that lack of engagement that fans had in Edge's return and said, okay, you know, we've got to do something else here. Let's do that break glass in case of emergency with Daniel Bryan that we always do. How much do you think a loss would hurt Roman here, even if he doesn't take the pin, Kelly, in terms of not having the championship and being able to call himself, you know, the big dog? I mean, he'll still do that, head of the table and stuff, but, you know, so much of that character is based around him being champion. And if he doesn't have the title, even if he doesn't lose, how does that hurt? It'll be a different view of this character of Roman Reigns, which I think there's some value in. But how does it hurt the character that we've seen?
I don't think it hurts him too much because he's gotten so good at his character that I think he will remain over to the exact same way that he is now. My belief is that Daniel Bryan's involvement is literally to have a babyface win the main event without Roman Reigns losing. That's what I think that this is. And to have a babyface that's more interesting to have, because if Edge had beaten Roman Reigns, then you got to have Roman Reigns do the job. And I think that this is a way for Roman not to do the job. And I would not be surprised if Roman ends up winning a one-on-one with Bryan just in the next pay-per-view. And I can't remember the order of pay-per-views anymore. I used to be able to, but I would not be surprised if Roman got it back from Bryan relatively quickly, or if Bryan maybe does a brief stop at Jey Uso, because that was kind of a thing that was going on. But I think Roman will be absolutely fine. And I think in a normal year, he probably would have won the match with Edge to just continue his championship reign. But at any rate, I think that this version of Roman will be fine.
DJ, back to you for your second question or comment for us tonight.
It's real quick. What's crazy is that wouldn't it be crazy if both heels were champions? Like, we rarely see that, so maybe that will happen. That would be great. Bobby Lashley and Roman will win. I think that would be cool, too, you know, heel champs. But my second thing, EAW. They did an interview, said that when he did this thing with these guys, it took a toll on him. He was in shambles. He was stressed out. How are you stressed out? You're doing piece by piece, little by little. It's like a movie. You're not in a ring constant, like, you know, you're doing cinematic stuff. I don't know, guys. Like, do you think, like, he's going to wrestle more, less?
Well,
like,
who are you talking about, DJ?
Sting. He did an interview saying that he was in shambles and he was stressed about doing his match, and the match was really, you know, it wasn't even live.
Right.
So I don't know. Like, his body is there or his mind's not there. I don't know. I don't know if he's going to do other matches later on or what's going to happen to him. I don't know if he's ever going to be a champ. I don't know.
Well, I think it's a good thing we don't know. I mean, that creates a lot of intrigue as to what his role is going to be going forward. I wouldn't bet on him being champion. I think you've got to use a wrestler like Sting in small doses and protect his matches. He certainly shouldn't be wrestling on Dynamite anytime soon. You know, keep his matches, whatever they may be, whether they're going to continue to be cinematic matches going forward or whether they're going to be live in the ring. But, you know, a guy his age, coming off the injury that he came off of in that WWE match with Seth Rollins, you know, I can see where there's nerves, even in a post-produced match. That's going to be heightened if he does come back and do a live match in front of a live crowd in a ring. And, you know, especially, Kelly, with the level of work rate that AEW has built up within its ring, you know, this is a company that frequently has 3- and 4-star matches on Dynamite. A guy like Sting, that may concern him. You know, how am I going to – I don't want to be looking like the old guy. You know, he doesn't want to be the guy who can't pull his weight, comparatively speaking, to the rest of the roster. So those concerns, I think, are pretty valid for Sting.
Absolutely. I mean, Sting is such a weird X factor. His whole career, like, this is a guy who's a legend, yeah, but he was never more popular than during a segment of his career where he stopped wrestling and talking. Like, the two things that a wrestler is expected to do, he was most popular when he wasn't doing either. I think that the reason for him to be doing it the way he's doing is that he just can't do a great match anymore. He can't do a great one-on-one anymore. I would be very surprised to see him in a straightforward one-on-one unless it was a stipulation match of some kind, unless he was very protected in some way with the way the card was laid out. I don't think we're not going to see Sting in a 3.5+ star regular singles match at this time. I don't think. I would be very surprised unless it was kind of in the Warrior Hogan vein of being meticulously plotted out move for move. I just don't think we see that with Sting. I'll tell you what, I don't always watch AEW. I did watch it this week, and when Sting came out, I just didn't get all that excited because I don't know what any of it works toward. I hope that they find some value in him that really, really makes it worth the money that they probably put into him. But at this point, I don't know what that value is. And as you say, Greg, I think it's good that I don't know. I just hope that there proves to be a reason.
And DJ, back to you for your final question or comment for us tonight.
My final. Well, let me ask you a quick question. Did you see that Brian Cage went back? He apologized. That was so weird.
Yeah.
I'm confused on that, but okay. But okay, going back to EAW. One more thing, real quick. Here we go. Christian, I'm so confused. He's the workhorse, but then he's going to go fight a middleweight, like somebody who's not even known, somebody who's just a middle card. I'm confused. You're saying all these things. You'd think that he would at least go through somebody first, you know, and then work himself up. But you think that he's working himself up slowly or do you get better situated? Do you think that they're not going to throw him to the wolves until later, little by little, or do you think that he's just going to do smash, 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 and then win the title, or what do you guys think of? Because it was just weird how it was some regular thing he was just, I was confused on that when he just did a great promo the other day.
You're talking about the match with Kazarian.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's people who are not going to like the idea that Christian's going to step in and face Kenny Omega if that's the direction they're going. So, you know, why not take some time to build him up, get him some wins on, I believe it's going to be on Dark Elevation Monday night against Kazarian. And so, you know, that's an opportunity. That's a draw for that show. You know, if AEW wants people to watch these YouTube shows that they're putting out there, there has to be a draw beyond, you know, see some guys and women that you might not see on Dynamite. So having Christian wrestle his first AEW match there, you know, you can quibble about whether or not that's the right move, but I can understand from a business standpoint why you'd want to do that. And it just gives, you know, Christian an opportunity to work his way up the card, Kelly, and not seem like he's walking in the doors and getting a title shot at Kenny Omega.
Yeah, so I understand it for all the reasons it is existing, but with Christian, they had to have that conversation of, does this define him down by having him have his first match on Elevation? Do we gain enough for eyeballs for Elevation to make it worth it that that's where we started him? Kind of like starting, well, let's use Bret Hart and WCW as an example. They could have brought him in a million ways, and they brought him in as a special referee. And it was for a main event, but it was like, is that how you want to bring in Bret Hart? It is an interesting choice, a strange choice. The choice of Kazarian as his opponent makes a lot of sense if you know their history from when they were in TNA. So so from that point, I kind of liked that little nod to history. And I like that they can't spend a ton of time explaining that, but at least they brought up that history. It'll just, I don't know. I think that the Christian experiment could really fall flat if they don't go hard and go fast. So I'll be interested to see how that goes. I will also comment on the fact that that Brian Cage moment with Ricky Starks and Taz trying to keep the peace, I didn't mind. It really was a weird segment. Like, there's no denying that. But Cage was giving an obviously false apology, and Starks looked like he was smiling into the camera like, yeah, yeah, I got to do this for now. I like Starks a lot. He's somebody I followed on NWA, and I just thought they're putting so much into pushing this guy. There's no way he'll be in NWA a year from now. And so I'm cautiously optimistic about where that's going. I think that the big split will be soon.
All right. DJ, thank you for the phone call tonight. Look forward to hearing from you again soon.
Tomorrow, next week. Yep.
All right. Thank you. All right, Kelly. Get ready to hear from DJ again next week. You got 1 week to prepare. All right. That's all I'm saying. we've got.
I look forward to it.
We've got an email question here to get through before we close out for this evening. This is from Jack from Swansea, Wales. He says, hey, Greg, hope you are safe and well. Feeling very excited for Mania now after watching SmackDown. I feel like we are in a decent position now a few weeks away heading into Mania. Just wanted to talk about the three main matches at Mania that are very unpredictable, which is a nice change of pace. Sasha versus Bianca, I could see this going either way, but if it is the main event night one, I'd assume Bianca wins and gets the big celebration at the end of the night, but I still don't think it would be a bad thing for Bianca to lose in a competitive high-profile match. Drew versus Bobby, I really am not sure at all who's coming out with the win in this one, and I could see any of Edge, Bryan, or Reigns winning, although I think Reigns has to keep the title long-term. What do you think about these three match outcomes? Cheers, Greg. Stay safe. Thank you, Jack. You do the same. We talked a little bit about Reigns, Edge, and Bryan in terms of who we think is going to win. I'm a little less all in on Daniel Bryan, I think, than you are. I think there's a pretty strong possibility that Roman Reigns retains, but I'm kind of like you. I don't really see an avenue for Edge to win at this point. I'm not sure that that's a, I'm sure, you know, even Roman Reigns retaining, I think, is a little more exciting than Edge winning for me anyway, personally. So I'll go with Reigns retaining. If you go with Bryan, I think that's kind of where you're leaning, Daniel Bryan winning that match.
Essentially, we agree that Reigns Bryan continues, right? I think that you get a few months out of that regardless of Reigns or Bryan winning, and I'm totally cool with not knowing which one comes out with it. But Roman could also stop off in a few places. Roman as champion is, as heel champion, is everything that I ever hoped it would be. So, gosh, this is Sophie's choice. I would love to see this go either way. I'm going to say Brian, just so we can disagree in the WWE announcer mold.
Okay, cool. Sasha Banks versus Bianca Belair. I think this is a Belair win no matter where it is on the card, whether it main events night one or whether it doesn't. And a lot of it is the reasoning that I laid out earlier, where it's, you got a Belair win. She can do a rematch with Banks. She can go Bayley. With Banks, I don't think the possibilities are as open. So I'm going to go Belair here.
Yeah, I go Belair as well. I don't know that she's Teflon yet. She can talk herself back from bad situations. That's definitely something that's well within her abilities, because she's very talented. But I think that this is I'm not going to say safe, but I think she wins this.
And then McIntyre-Lashley. I think this all comes down to how impressive has Lashley been to the WWE brass over the last several weeks and months, because it seems like the idea from the beginning was put the title on Lashley so McIntyre can have his crowning moment at WrestleMania. Has Lashley done enough to dissuade Vince McMahon and whomever, Bruce Pritchard, from sticking with that call? I don't know that that's the case. I think, especially if Roman Reigns, I have him retaining at night two, I think Drew McIntyre wins the title here.
And, you know, Lashley as champion and Drew chasing is good. So if that's what they want to do for the next few months, then they can do that. So for similar reasons, oh, man, do I want to choose Lashley? Am I crazy here? Because obviously this was built so Drew could win this in front of fans. But Lashley could be changing minds with the work that he's doing. I love that there are two main championships, because that adds doubt to both of them. Whereas if this was just WrestleMania with one main men's championship, we'd both choose the babyface, I think. Do I do this for the sake of argument again? No, I got to go with Drew. I think that this was built for Drew, and I think that Lashley will be fine either way.
All right, so that is the WrestleMania card. As I said, next weekend, the PWT Talks NXT crew, including Kelly Wells, will be back here on Wrestling Night in America, previewing NXT TakeOver, two nights of that as well. So that'll be a fun show. Kelly, before we let you go, I know you listed your CV at the beginning of the show, but for just to remind everybody what you do and where, for the Torch, and when people can find your work.
Yeah, so every Wednesday I do the NXT recap on the Torch, and then I host PWT Talks NXT right thereafter. So you can check that out live, or you can check it out later, because I know a lot of you are watching AEW live. I get it. There's a war going on out there, folks, so I get it. And then I do recaps for New Japan every now and then. And, wow, weird things going on in New Japan right now. And if it wasn't WrestleMania season, we'd talk about them too. So you can find me on social media at Spooky Milk or Spooky Milk Games. Love being here on the show, and I will be honored to host it next week, Greg.
Thank you, Kelly. Always appreciate hearing from you and hearing your thoughts on what's going on in wrestling.
Cheers.
And don't forget, next Sunday night, same time, 8 p.m. Eastern for Wrestling Night in America. And then the week after, I'll be back with WrestleMania, breaking down that show. Hard to believe we're here already, WrestleMania season. So hope you tune into that show as well after WrestleMania goes off the air. It's one of our busiest shows of the year. So if you do want to get in and get in on the conversation and call in, you want to call in early. And maybe you want to email us, wnialivecast@gmail.com, that night instead of calling in, because it might be a late night, just a warning for WrestleMania night. Otherwise, always good to talk to you guys on the phones and the emails. And you can find me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks. We'll talk to you again soon, because if it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.